Hello, this is We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network on the internet. We're broadcasting today from two shipping containers at Roberta's Pizza, which is in Bushwick, Brooklyn, 261 Moore Street. Today's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market, and I am Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
We are Groundworks, Inc. Our roots are here in Brooklyn, and we build, design, and maintain gardens all over New York City and the surrounding area. Our show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. Please check us out on our Facebook page, Groundworks, Inc., We Dig Plants, or have a look at our website, groundworksgardens.com, to learn more about what we do.
Now, today is February 14th, Valentine's Day, a day fraught with anxiety for so many people, especially men, as they contemplate buying just the right flower. Right, Alice? Now, I worked very briefly for a florist many years ago, very early in my horticultural career, and I experienced firsthand the panic, the desperation in the last-minute procrastinators as they tried to buy and have delivered, in time, the perfect symbol of their love and devotion. They usually wanted flowers, they usually wanted roses, they usually wanted red roses. I was in the trenches, witness to the business of flowers, handling the endlessly ringing phones in a room filled with dozens of florists, helpers, and delivery men. The florists had their knives in their hands. They were cutting stems at lightning speed. They were standing in a pile of discarded petals and leaves.
How many cuts did you get?
A lot. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't romantic. It was kind of like ordered chaos. Now today, we're going to go even further behind the scenes of the flower business with our special guest, Amy Stewart, who has written a book about the subject called Flower Confidential, The Good, The Bad, and The Beautiful in the Business of Flowers. Welcome, Amy.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, besides this book on the business of flowers, Amy Stewart is a best-selling author of several books, including the New York Times bestseller, Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities, which I think is a great title. She's also the author of The Earth Moved, On the Remarkable Achievements of Earthworms, which won the California Horticultural Society's Writers Award and was also a featured selection of the Discovery Channel Book Club. And Amy also writes regularly for Organic Gardening and the San Francisco Chronicle. So you're with us, you're in Eureka, California. Is that right, Amy?
That's right, yeah.
Great. I'm sure it's warmer than it is here right now in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
probably a little bit.
So I'm really glad that you wrote this book to help dispel some of the myths about the flower industry. I'd always wondered if a book would ever be written about that, and lo and behold, you have. I'd just like to start with some of the statistics that you quoted in your book, and then we'll get into some questions for you, because we have lots of them.
Good.
The first is, Valentine's Day is the busiest day a flower shop will face all year. And unlike other floral holidays, it all has to happen in one day. Nobody wants a bouquet on February 15th, right?
Right.
So that's
definitely
14 hours of making all your money.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And that, according to your book, that one day accounts for one third of all flower sales. Is that right?
Well, holiday flower sales.
Flower sales. Mm-hmm. And then another statistic that I found interesting was one third of all American adults will buy flowers or a plant on Valentine's Day. Right?
Yeah. It's really, I think it's sort of the default gift, you know. It's definitely the first thing on people's mind. So it makes it just a huge holiday for the flower business.
And is it true that half of these buyers want roses, usually red roses?
Yes, you know, I think much to the frustration of florists.
Yes.
Who would love a little variety, not only to keep their own jobs interesting, but to be a little more creative and also to get to work with flowers that are maybe a little bit more seasonal than a summer flower like a rose.
In the winter.
Exactly, right.
And then another statistic was two-thirds of these buyers are men. Right? Two-thirds of the orders come from men.
Sure.
Who aren't usually the flower consumers, right? Don't more women buy flowers regularly than men?
Yes. I mean, overwhelmingly, women buy flowers. Women buy flowers for other women. And even on a holiday like Valentine's Day, you know, women will buy flowers for their daughter, maybe, or, you know, someone else
in
their life.
Sister, mother, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And of course, that's definitely the case on Mother's Day and just generally throughout the year. So Valentine's Day is a little unusual because it's the one time of year when florists are dealing with a lot of male customers.
And they need help. They really do. I discovered that. And I remember being radical and saying, okay, why don't you, you know, because we had run out of red roses. I say, come on, that's so obvious. You need to get something different. She's going to love those, you know, Gerber daisies.
Right, those lilies, those tulips.
Yeah,
well, you know, that is
orchids.
One thing that, yeah, I mean, that's one thing that florists do. And you really can't blame them for that because, you know, flowers are a perishable product. So florists have in their cooler what they have that day.
And they can't get any more.
They can't get any more. And so, yeah, I mean, people who call a flower shop the day before or the day of Valentine's Day will very often hear the florist say, well, we have some lovely mixed bouquets of pink lilies and blah, blah, blah. How does that sound? And what they're doing is they're looking at their cooler going, oh, my God, what have I got in here? What can I move?
Well, personally, for my husband who might be listening, never, ever get me red roses, okay?
Yeah.
Or blue carnations either, which he's done. So I'm trying to have our audience imagine if the typical retailer had to prepare for and deliver one third of its business in a single day. It's not like the Christmas season where people are Christmas shopping for a month. Of course, it's busy, and it's busy, you know, a few days before and the day before. But in a single day, they have to prepare and deliver, you know, a third of their business. So how is it possible? How can so many flowers be ready for market on time? What has made this possible? And the first question I have for you, Amy, is when I read your book, you start at the San Francisco Wholesale Flower Market, which Alice and I visited a number of years ago, and we were so impressed with. And you describe it as Wall Street in the Garden of Eden, one link in the $40 billion worldwide flower industry. So when you were there, what made you decide to write this book on this business of flowers?
Well, you know, it was something I was very curious about. I really hadn't given a lot of thought to where flowers come from and what might have happened to them before they got to the flower shop. And I happen to live in a small town in Northern California that is home to the largest grower of cut flowers in the United States. So
that's right.
Yeah, Sun Valley. So really, this story was in my own backyard. I was, you know, they're a large business in a small town, and it was very intriguing to me. And they're a national player, so they're really moving flowers all over the country.
And there's not that many. There's not that much growing of cut flowers in the United States anymore.
That's right. Yeah, most of the flowers we buy, around 78% of the flowers we buy, come from somewhere else. And almost entirely Latin America in our case.
That was a really interesting part of the book, actually.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't realize how many of our flowers are imported and also what the significance of that is. You know, the reason that roses and carnations and chrysanthemums are the top three best-selling flowers in the country are not because they're our favorites necessarily. It's because they work well as freight. They're very durable, and they can be shipped over long distances. So they are therefore what's available, and because that's what's available, that's what we buy.
Right, the practical side.
Yes.
Not the romantic side.
Not as much.
In fact, well, in your book, you quote the Roman playwright Seneca. He said in the first century, and I really like this quote, so I wanted to share it with our audience. He said, "Do not men live contrary to nature who crave roses in winter or seek to raise a spring flower like a lily by means of hot water heaters and artificial changes in temperature?" So the Romans were doing it well before us.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, I was really surprised to learn that this business of forcing a flower to bloom out of season goes back to Roman times. I think we tend to think of it as something very modern, and that in the good old days, that never happened. And in fact, we've really sort of always been doing it.
Vanity is very deep.
Well, hopefully we won't follow their trajectory. So tell us that it's Valentine's Day. Tell us how a typical rose starts its life from breeder to someone's Valentine's Day bouquet.
Well, you know, the most common path for a rose that you might get on Valentine's Day is that about Boy, especially this time of year, you know, those flowers have probably already been in the country for a week or two. So probably they were harvested. Yeah, they would have been harvested in late January and in a greenhouse in Ecuador or Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
They probably spend their first night on site there at the greenhouse. The flowers are conditioned so that they can really handle this long journey. So they're brought into a room that's kept very cold, ideally about 38 degrees.
That's so pretty cold. That's barely above freezing.
That's right. That's the goal. For almost all flowers, with the exception of tropical flowers, they really are freshest if you keep them at a temperature like that. 38, 40 degrees is really ideal. So they're chilled way down, and they're fed a special concentration of food that's going to sort of pump them full of sugars and get them ready for this journey that they're going to take. The next day, they might go in a box and on a truck and go to the airport, where they will be flown into probably Miami. Most flowers go through Miami International Airport because Miami has a very good perishables facility. You can fly a plane load of flowers right into a special area where they can immediately get off the plane and chill down and go through their agriculture inspection. And not every airport is set up for that.
Okay.
So something like 80% of our imports go through Miami.
Okay.
Yeah, I was reading about that. They have, isn't it true also that some of the flowers, some passenger aircraft have in their cargo holds many times cut flowers as well?
Yes. Throughout the year, most of the flowers that are imported are just in there with your luggage in the hold of a passenger jet.
Mm-hmm.
It's really only during a holiday like Valentine's Day that they are flying entire planes full of flowers all day, every day into the airport.
That's amazing. And I also read in your book that part of the reason the flowers are so expensive around the holidays, besides, you know, supply and demand, is that they have to fly those planes empty back to Colombia and Ecuador. Is that true?
Sure. I mean, yeah, you think about it, there's not a corresponding amount of stuff that just happens to need to go back that direction at that time of year.
Right. It's not like ballast.
Yeah, you're paying for a round-trip ticket. You're paying for a huge amount of overtime labor at every stage of the process, from the farm to the flower shop. Everyone is working overtime, and that's expensive.
Right.
And you're also paying for the fact that the growers started pinching back those roses in December and really didn't bring much money in because they had to start pruning back the plant so they would get as many blooms as possible at just the right moment in January or maybe early February.
For the big bang, right.
For the big bang. So there's been a sacrifice. There's been an economic loss at the farm and really throughout the supply chain leading up to that moment.
So after they leave Miami, then what happens?
Well, they probably go into a truck and go to a wholesaler or maybe directly to a retailer. I mean, a lot of big retailers like grocery stores are buying flowers direct. You know, they're obviously not sending a buyer down at 3 o'clock in the morning to the local wholesale market to buy the day's flowers like flower shops do.
Right.
But anyway, so they're going to either a wholesaler or maybe to a retailer, and they might spend a day or two in transit and maybe in a warehouse, and then they end up in the flower shop.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly for florists at Valentine's Day, they are just they have this incredible production line going for really a week or two leading up to Valentine's Day. So a lot of those arrangements are mostly made up.
Pre-made,
you know, the ferns are in there, the baby's breath, all those kind of things. And then the more high-end flowers are kind of added at the last minute, and they're kept in different stages of cooling depending on how much they need to open up.
Mm-hmm.
So some flowers can be kept out almost at room temperature to encourage them to open up a little bit more. Others are kept pretty cold, so they'll stay just like they are. I mean, it's a real balancing act trying to bring it all off. It's like cooking a huge meal where everything has to be hot out of the oven and ready to be served all at once. You know how hard that
and
is.
Display and ready, because it's all about appearance, right?
It's all got to be beautiful and perfect at once,
right.
Yeah.
Well, we have to unfortunately take a little bit of a break, and we're going to talk some more and We Dig Plants with Amy when we come back. We really have so many more questions for you.
A long, long time ago, on graduation day, You handed me your book. I signed this way, roses are red, my love. Violets are blue. Sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you.
Hi, we're back on We Dig Plants. We're with Amy Stewart, of the author of Flower Confidential. It's Valentine's Day. We're talking about the industry of flowers and red roses. So, Amy, a question. We were just speaking about the shipping and kind of as the flower comes into Miami, kind of what happens to it. So now let's talk about the purchase of it. And the rule of thumb in the industry from your book is that a grower gets 1/10 of what the customer pays for the flower. In the late 1800s, a grower got around $1 for a dozen roses. So that means they sold at retail for about $10 to $12 a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now, what is it? $100 a dozen, basically?
Well, it depends. You know, that's one of the interesting things. And I was so surprised to go back through old newspaper archives and sources like that and really look at what flowers sold for 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in real dollars, it kind of hasn't changed that much. I mean, a dozen roses for $10 is what you pay at the grocery store now.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Now, obviously, you can't get, you know, fine roses from a florist for that price, and we can talk about why that is. There's actually some very good reasons why that is. But, you know, I saw stories in the New York Times 100 years ago about very high-end, wonderful flowers selling for $1 a stem, and $1 a stem at a flower shop is still within the realm. And when you compare that to the difference in, say, what a meal cost 100 years ago and what it costs today, it's really surprising.
Okay. So how can we get flowers that cheaply? What are the factors?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, growers really aren't being paid much. I mean, a grower might get 10 cents a stem, 20, 30 cents a stem, depending on the flower, which really isn't a lot. And, you know, it's a lot about volume, and it's also about quality. So, for instance, I visited rose growers in Ecuador who grow specifically for the grocery store market,
mm-hmm.
and they prune their rose plants in such a way that they get 3 or 4 flowers off every plant every month. And in order to make the plant do that, these are smaller flowers on shorter stems.
Okay.
And so the economics of that, if you in your mind sort of multiply that out across acres and acres of greenhouses, if you're getting 3 or 4 flowers off a plant every month, you can afford to charge less for them.
Right.
If you're doing high-end roses for a florist who wants larger flowers on longer stems, then you're going to prune that plant so that it will produce 1 flower per plant per month. And you got to charge more for that because you're only getting a quarter of the flowers out the door every month.
Right.
That's astounding, because when I think about a rose bush as a gardener,
mm-hmm.
I think of dozens and dozens of blooms on one plant. It's a very different plant that they're growing for cut flowers.
It's a very different plant. They are growing different varieties than you and I grow in our garden,
mm-hmm.
and they're pruning them and caring for them differently. It's very surprising to see what roses look like in a greenhouse that's growing for production. One of the things they do with roses is that they very gently bend some of the canes down so that they lay down along the ground. And what they're doing there is they're trying to make sure that every leaf on the plant is getting the maximum light and isn't being shaded by other parts of the plant,
mm-hmm.
so that it can really serve the needs of the flowers that are being produced off the plant.
So it's not really a plant. It's more like a flower factory, right?
It really is. It is truly, really a workhorse. And breeders think about those things. Breeders think about things like
how large are the
leaves going to be,
hmm.
and how durable is it going to be in a hydroponic kind of setting. You know, that's another funny thing is that I don't know if you've ever tried to dig a rose bush out of your garden and you find out that the roots just go on forever and ever and they're impossible to get out.
Right.
Well, the flowers that you buy the roses that you get at a flower shop, they came off a plant whose roots could literally fit in a shoebox.
Right. It's like a stunted method of growing, right? They're kind of, there's no soil. It's more like in a kind of a gel-like material.
It's some kind of hydroponic system, usually. Wow. So they're being grown in rock wool, or they're being grown in chopped coconut fiber, and mm-hmm. fed a very special mix of nutrients constantly to keep it growing. So yeah, it's a different plant in every way.
Right. So let's talk another kind of aspect to this floral industry, and also Valentine's Day, because if you're late and you don't get the rose, you end up with like the ubiquitous kind of potted plant, mm-hmm. like potted tulips or daffodils or hyacinths. And in your book, you describe these. I guess you went to the coolers, and you describe it as a chilled, chemical, and impersonal
environment.
Morgue, kind
yeah,
of. Like
a morgue, yeah. And Alice and I have been into those. We've been in them at local growers. We know what that's like. It's strange, isn't it?
It is strange. It really, it has nothing to do with a garden.
Right.
It has nothing to do with
forced.
Nature.
It is forced.
Right.
Literally.
It is very forced, yeah. You know, I will say that one advantage of potted plants on Valentine's Day is that if you are trying to buy local, potted plants are still very much a local business. You cannot ship soil across our border because
right.
of the possibilities of disease. So
right.
our plant growing industry is still very much an American homegrown industry. So it's got that going for it.
Okay. Can you also quickly tell us the differences between the European market and the United States market for cut flowers?
Yeah, I found that very interesting, especially in Holland at that Alnsmeer auction. That was a really interesting part of the book.
Yeah, the Dutch still very much own the flower industry worldwide. It's their business, and they're hanging on to it. So if you ever go to Amsterdam, it's very much worthwhile to get up very early in the morning, get on a bus, and go to the Alsmeer auction. It's a giant flower auction, and really a huge percentage of the world's cut flower production flows through these Dutch auctions. I think it's close to half of all the flowers in the world go through one of those auctions.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Even the roses that come from South America and like Kenya, they go through Holland first and then come back to the States?
Kenyan roses, a lot of them do go through. Latin America is a little bit different. Here mm-hmm. in the United States, we tend to buy flowers directly from Latin America and bypass a system like that, but we are unusual in that regard.
Okay.
So yes, Europeans know that when they're buying flowers, they most likely came from Africa or from Asia or maybe from throughout Europe, but they got routed through Holland and bought and sold and auctioned off as they went.
And
now, the funny thing about the Europeans is that they buy a lot more flowers for just day-to-day use to have in their home, and they buy fewer flowers for special occasions. So
I know. I found that really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the opposite of us in that regard. And in general, the European market is regarded as being a little more sophisticated and a little more discerning. You know, I heard many European florists and wholesalers say, oh, American flowers, they're the worst. We send our worst tulips to the United States.
I'm not surprised.
Well, thankfully, Martha Stewart really kind of changed a lot of that and brought, you know,
some taste,
a variety of flowers into the public realm, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Viburnums and hellebores and, you know, all those luscious things.
Yeah, Martha Stewart really took the flower industry by storm. She shook it up, she surprised a lot of people, and they really had to scramble to keep up with her. So she gets a lot of credit for that.
Now, what's the story with the blue rose?
Well, there is a company in Australia called Florigene that has been working for decades now on developing a blue rose. Now, the thing is, roses cannot produce blue pigment. They don't have a gene that allows them to do that.
Right.
So they had to go to petunias and delphiniums, isolate that gene, implant it in a rose, and make really a genetically modified rose to try to get blue. They got purple. They didn't quite get blue, but they're working on it.
Do you think the world is ready for a blue rose?
Yeah, I question that. I question whether the world wants a blue rose. It's been sort of a holy grail for a long time, and it's definitely a novelty, but we like to at least pretend that flowers are very natural and very much of nature. So I don't know how people would react to a blue rose.
Yeah.
I personally don't want one.
No. No. It just ain't right.
Right.
In your book, you also talk about Holland, as we said, and as kind of like the birthplace of the flower industry and still a powerful player. But a lot of it, as you said, has moved to Latin America and to Africa. And what there was a part of the book where you talked about how the trafficking in cocaine sort of helped create and support the flower industry there, wanting to reduce the trafficking in cocaine. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, during the Reagan administration, a decision was made to lift the import tariff on flowers so that they could be brought into the country without any sort of import taxes being imposed upon them. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, we're going to encourage the Colombians to grow roses instead of growing coca plants. Mm-hmm. Now, we can all see how well that worked. The war on drugs rages on, but it really has helped to create a huge flower industry in Latin America. It has also helped to really wipe out the flower industry here in the United States.
Right.
Growers in the U.S. simply can't compete on price with those flowers that are easier and cheaper to grow in Latin America.
Right. And also in your book, you report about complaints concerning labor and environmental problems in Latin America. Mm-hmm. Has this influenced American consumers, in your opinion?
I think that consumers have been kind of slow to make the connection. We really think about where our food comes from. Mm-hmm. I think we haven't quite gotten there with flowers. But mm-hmm. it's starting to happen, especially for things like weddings. Everybody wants to have a green wedding. That's been a very big thing.
Right.
But most people just don't know enough about where flowers come from to know to ask.
Right.
And the flower industry was slow to jump on the bandwagon. I think a lot of people in the flower industry sort of said, oh, this green thing, this is a trend, this will go away, and really kind of didn't want to embrace it. But because of, enough pressure from consumers and from the media, they have realized that they can't ignore these problems. They can't ignore problems with labor issues or with environmental issues.
What I found really, really disturbing and interesting in your book was that each rose is dipped in pretty powerful fungicides before it's shipped. The whole plant, the petals, the stem, the leaves, everything is usually dipped in fungicide.
Yeah, some are. It really depends on the farm and the time of year and other things. But what they're doing is they're trying to prevent fungus from growing on the flower in transit, because when it gets opened in Miami and inspected,
right,
it can be thrown away if there's any fungus on it at all. So
right.
There is this real incentive to get past inspection. And mm-hmm. I did see roses. I saw this personally. The entire bouquet being dunked in a barrel of fungicide in order to prevent botrytis from growing on the plant.
Which didn't smell good. It was pretty strongly smelling stuff, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's pretty gross,
Yeah.
And so, of course, growers will say, well, it dissipates very rapidly, da-da-da.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I personally, if I have a choice, I would prefer flowers that haven't been drenched in chemicals. I don't think that's too much to ask.
So you're not going to take a bath in your roses that your that your mate has given to you?
I actually had a flower farmer in Ecuador tell me that. He said, I would never take a bath with rose petals.
Okay.
And I thought, wow.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap up today's show, but we have one last question for you. And that is, how do you, with all this knowledge, how do you buy flowers now that you've been inside the belly of the beast? And what advice can you give our listeners?
I do love to buy flowers that are local and seasonal and organic, and that can be done at the farmer's market mm-hmm. very easily. And you can find those people and develop relationships with them and like that. But I still buy imported flowers, but I buy from farms that are really trying to do the right thing. And there are wonderful farms everywhere in the world that are growing either organically or very close to it, and frankly, providing jobs that people desperately need. So
yeah,
there is an eco label for flowers. It's called Vera Flora.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you're mentioning that.
Yeah, so you can check that out. I think they've got something like 1 billion stems a year they certify, and also fair trade. So just like you buy fair trade coffee, you can buy fair trade flowers.
Right, and maybe we can bring back some incentives for the U.S. government to get our flower industry back up on its pedals, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for being our special guest today. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but we would love to have you back on the show. Maybe for Halloween to talk about your newest book, Wicked Plants.
That sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. And we'd like to thank Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we'd like to thank our sponsor, Whole Foods Market. Today's show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. You can join us on our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants. We'd love to get your feedback on our show, and we'll be posting a link to Amy Stewart's website and some of her favorite flower sources later on tonight. Thank you so much for listening. Happy Valentine's Day.
See you in the garden.